This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There's no place like the movie theater. The smell of fresh popcorn welcomes you to a full body experience, while candies and sodas compete for your attention. Hoping to join you in the best seats you've reserved on Fandango. It's where movie lovers buy tickets, pick seats, and double up on rewards points all online. All that's left is to walk in, snack up, and sit back. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record! For the United States, unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
I gotta hear that Dr. Dre in the next episode.
Yeah. Okay,
that's the one. I gotta hear a little la-di-da-di-da. That's what I can't
I'm
wait for.
I'm gonna go with gin and juice in honor of my older counterparts.
Yeah, I'm about to say.
You're too young.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Are the bottle, which
is. But y'all were driving during that time.
Is that about you or is that just a shot at us?
I'm just looking out.
I missed that during the live show from Chris Sims, and I'm kind of glad I did. What was that?
Yeah. I don't know what that was either. I don't know. I know it came to my attention last night because, like, as you saw in our group text, my sister, who's, you know, following TikTok, my daughter, they're all over it. They saw, you know, some people having some laughs about that little segment on TikTok. So that's why it got brought up. But yeah, that was kind of embarrassing. It's one of those things I kind of messed around with in rehearsal. And then when it came like real time to do it, I was like, man, am I really about to go do this and have, like, be that silly? So I guess I'll take it.
Good for you. And you've been... What's the best word to describe it? Discouraged in the past from singing on the program.
But, yeah, I have been discouraged. You're right.
not this program,
not this
unfortunately.
Program.
The,
right.
The other one, the slightly more significant one that's on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern during football season. But sing whenever you want here. And apparently the F-bomb is now acceptable on morning football programming. I don't know if you saw Kyle Brandt dropping the F-bomb yesterday.
Wow, Kyle.
Come to the dark side, Kyle.
I like it. That makes it. I like Kyle. I like to hear that, too. I mean, wow. Now, the fact that they work for the NFL Network, will they get, like, fined by the league? Will they have to illegally use some language?
I think it's a personal conduct.
It's personal conduct.
Personal
right.
conduct policy violation. Yeah, yeah, I think he's got some issues there. He's going to hear from the commissioner.
I love it. I did not know that. I don't know how I missed that. Do you know what was the context of how he dropped it?
It was a leaked Corso effort, and it just kind of popped out, I guess.
Oh, so. It was one of those. That's even better. I like it. Yep. The old accidental one's the best one, because it's like you don't mean to, and then you realize it comes out of your mouth, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I just did that.
You've done it accidentally with the S-bomb. You've done it on purpose with the S-bomb. You kind of came really close with an F-bomb once to the point where people thought that that's what you had said.
Right.
But it wasn't. So let's not push it, though. Although this would be the perfect week to do it. Here's the thing. They're still all obsessed with the Olympics at NBC. We could do whatever the hell we want.
You're
and
right.
They're not even going to
know. No
idea. They're just not going to know.
No.
We could just do a cursed show like Eddie Murphy used to say when he would – do the bit where he was chastised by Bill Cosby because of all the swearing in his show. Not that, I mean, Bill Cosby, I guess irony would be the appropriate word there, but Eddie Murphy would say, you just don't come out and do a cursed show. You don't come out and say hello, and just he rattled off.
Yeah.
And it was a list of profanity that my friends and I used to have memorized, and that would be how we would greet each other.
Which, nice
if
greeting.
Any of the parents were around, was not. It was not. It was not an ideal greeting
do.
If any of the grown-ups
right.
heard that. Anyway,
you're right. We could get away with it. We could get away with it. This place is crazy. Still, you know, I mean, look at me. I'm out of my studio still too. I'm stuck in the corner of the office. But man, it is all Olympics here. The building is completely full. You'd be really comfortable here. You'd be really good with
sure
all the people here around you. Yeah, you'd be really relaxed and normal.
I'm sure I'd be uttering no profanities whatsoever, and everything would be fine. Although what happened was, being in that kind of mask optional environment for 9 days, it eventually
broke you down a little. Yeah, it did. I know. I know. I noticed the last day I saw the mask down a little bit here and there, and I went, "Oh, okay, Mike, you know." Well, yeah, what can you do? You start to get used to it, and you're just like, oh, man, it's tough to fight this all the time.
Our compound at SoFi Stadium, it really did feel like a compound. It was huge. It was like a parking lot. It was an interior parking lot that was gigantic. And so I never felt like we were, you know, pressed together.
Right.
So unlike on the elevator from ground floor to the press box on game day.
I could have saw that.
That was COVID paradise, let me tell you. I mean, now everybody had their masks on, but we were sardined in there. And like on the third and fourth and fifth floor, they had to yell at people to get off because it was too heavy. It wouldn't go.
Right.
So that's how crowded it was.
Wow,
so that was,
good.
I'm day three away from that exposure, if there was one. So I still have one more COVID test. I'm probably going to take it tonight just to make sure I don't have it. So,
all right, anyway, good luck.
That's the PS, the tail on the donkey from our fun 9 days in Los Angeles. Let's get to it. It was not a fun day for Joe Burrow on Super Bowl Sunday. Obviously, they didn't win the game. If you don't know the outcome to that, I don't know where you've been. But he does have that injury. And, you know, as we surmised after the game, if it was a normal regular season Sunday, he probably is out for the rest of the game. He probably doesn't come back. And then we spend all of Monday waiting to hear what the damage was to the knee. We found out yesterday that he's got a knee injury. They didn't get into the specifics, which ligaments are impacted, but he won't need surgery, which is good news. You know, it could be like a grade 2 MCL sprain. You don't have surgery for that. It just takes 4 to 6 weeks for it to fully heal. He's going to need to do some rehab, so maybe it's more than just resting. With an MCL, you just kind of rested. But it clearly was injured, and there was no way in hell the guy wasn't going to finish the game.
That's right.
And he did. Yeah. And he did. Well, how much of it, of his preparation for next season, it affects, we'll see. But it sounds like for now it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. And I think that's the big thing. Just the fact that, you don't want the off-season preparation affected by it. I think that's the number one thing. It's really another warning signal going into the off-season for the Cincinnati Bengals to go like, hey, warning, we have to get more protection for the best player on our football team, the guy that has changed the perception of our football team completely, the culture, everything. I mean, that's the big thing. We talked about this a lot last year after the season, about how they put him in harm's way too much as a rookie, which ultimately led to the, you know, the right knee or left knee ACL tear. You know, that to me has to be priority number one for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's amazing that they were in the Super Bowl with the lack of protection in the divisional round or even the AFC Championship round. And then even watching the game back more closely on film, Mike, I mean, no chance. Look at one guy, make a move. Look at one guy, I got to look to assess the pass rush. You know, even like plays where I thought, ooh, the protection was pretty good watching it live on Sunday. When I went back and watched on film, I was like, damn, no, it wasn't. You know, he still had to get the ball out of hand. It just was like, oh, it wasn't just on him right away. But this has to be the number one thing they got to do in this offseason. You got about everything you need on that roster, the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, there's not a lot of weaknesses, but that is the one glaring weakness, and I think the one thing that can really hold their team back, and hopefully they'll spend some money in free agency and maybe get another two guys in the draft and get some depth there, but they can't go on like this, or they're going to ruin their crown jewel in Joe Burrow.
And that becomes an issue not only for the draft, and they have spent draft capital in recent years on the offensive line.
Hasn't been the
best.
But
at some point, you have to go out there and get the proven talent. It's not like there are great left tackles, right tackles, guards, centers available in free agency every given year. And if there are, you got to pay for them. And that's really going to be the challenge for the Cincinnati Bengals. Not just total dollars, but structure. The structure of the contract that is given to a free agent that is viewed as someone who is skilled and who could help the effort. The allure of Joe Burrow could maybe get one of these folks to take less. But I'm looking at Trey Hendrickson's contract from last year, their crown jewel of free agency.
Right.
They don't guarantee money beyond the first year.
They're
one of those
deal
teams
that
won't do that.
Right.
Well, the deal with that is you sometimes aren't going to get the best available free agents because they're going to go somewhere where they know they've got 2 years of fully guaranteed compensation. So you got a small handful of teams that do that. The Packers, the Bengals, and the Steelers stand out. The Steelers broke that mold with T.J. Watt. Now, whether it's permanent remains to be seen. But the Bengals need to do it if they want to get some competent high-end offensive line talent, even if they're willing to take less total dollars to come play with Joe Burrow. You may have to rethink your structure when it comes time to pay these guys. They're definitely going to have to rethink that structure when it's time to pay Joe Burrow. They may want to go ahead and start rethinking it now.
Well, I think so. I think this is a time, if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, Mike Brown and company, you know, management, you start to look at it and go, wait, we're in that window we've talked about. You got Joe Burrow on the rookie contract. It's time to kind of go all in right now and start pushing pieces in there and start going, wait, we got the team. You know, you really look at it. We know the skill positions are set up. They're good there. Got a good tight end. You know, defensive side of the ball. You know, yeah, good defensive lineman. Maybe add another guy in free agency there. Linebacker's pretty good. Secondary, pretty good. Yeah, okay, they'll probably look for another corner to help out that, you know, area of the football team as well. But, man, it's really the only thing you look at the team going forward to go, okay, they got to figure out the right five and how they're going to, you know, manage this offensive line so they can maximize everything that Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Ja'Marr Chase have to offer for the offense. You know, that's where it really stinks too. You know, you just, again, when I watch back the film, there's people open on a handful of plays where you go, oh man, if he's got time, he's going to hit Ja'Marr Chase for a 20-yard out route here. You know, who knows what else other plays could be delivered if there was a little bit more protection, like we talked about yesterday. He has another half a second on the last play of the game. He's going to take a few steps to the right and see Ja'Marr Chase wide open down the right sideline because Jalen Ramsey fell. So, got to get it done for the health of Joe Burrow and to maximize the potential of the great skill unit they got there in Cincinnati.
What a moment that would have been too. You know, I just thought of that. Okay, let's say he does see Ja'Marr Chase wide open down the right sideline because their feet got tangled and Jalen Ramsey fell.
Right.
That ball gets thrown, and we've talked about how well Ja'Marr Chase tracked that long throw in the first quarter where Joe Burrow just kind of threw it up there and Chase went and got it. Think about the moment though. You got the Super Bowl on the line, win or lose, and you see at the bottom of the screen, there goes Chase. Win or lose, ball is in the air, 100 million plus watching, and a guy who has a recent history of drops has the ball coming in with no one around him. What a moment that would have been as the ball descends and either is or isn't caught, like Robin Williams in the Best of Times.
Yeah.
It would have been one of the all-time great Super Bowl moments. Either way, either he makes the catch or, you know, it squirts through his hands and he's the all-time GOAT of Super Bowl history.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it would have been an unbelievable moment. You're right. It really would have. I don't know. It's one of those where there's a part of you that goes, yeah, that would have been awesome to see. There's also a part of you that goes, I don't know if I really wanted to see that when a guy falls down and trips and that wins the Super Bowl either. Either way, we didn't get to it for the problem we're talking about. You know, that the fact that they couldn't figure out at all, you know, how to block the front four of the Los Angeles Rams. And the Los Angeles Rams, you know, to a point you brought up Monday or Sunday right after the game when we talked about that pivotal moment after the interception, you know, that goes back to the offensive line too. You know, there they are in a third and manageable situation. He only gets a chance to look at one guy, and then boom, there's Aaron Donald right on top of him. You know, had a play earlier in the drive where he had to scramble to the left almost instantly. So it was an issue. It cost their football team. You know, they're unable to sustain drives a lot of the time, the Bengals. That's why they're the big play Bengals a lot of the times, is because they're not capable of driving 12 plays 80 yards because their offensive line can't always put it together that way against the better defenses in football. So that's got to be like the number one priority in the offseason. And I'm sitting here, you know, looking at free agent offensive linemen. There's going to be some out there that it can help their football team a little bit. They're just going to have to figure out what they're going to spend in this contract situation, to your point, Mike.
Or they need to think about trading for some guys.
Maybe that too, right.
All options need to be on the table.
That's right.
They need to make that offensive line better. Draft, free agency, trades, whatever it takes. And use the fact, as you said, they've got one more year of low cost relative to what it's going to be.
Right.
Compensation for Joe Burrow. And, you know, the top objective next year as soon as the regular season ends is going to be pay Joe Burrow.
Pretty much, you're right.
He's going to want to get paid. He may be... Let's assume they make it to the playoffs next year.
And right.
I wouldn't assume anything with the AFC right now when you look around at the quality of the teams and the
Definitely
quality of the quarterbacks.
Not.
But let's just assume they make it to the playoffs. He could be the first one who says, I want my second contract before I set foot on the field for my first playoff game after my third season. Because the window opens. People think it opens after the third season is completely in the books. No. It opens the moment the regular season ends. And if anybody is going to do that play, which they should do, you pay me before I play in the first playoff game after my third season, it's Joe Burrow. We can set everything up. We can have it ready to go. We can do all the negotiation in November and December. The moment that week 18 ends, I want to put pen to paper. I want to do it. I've earned it. I've shown you what I can do. And now it's time to pay me accordingly. And I won't be surprised if they push it in that direction. If Burroughs can't push it that way, and the Bengals would be wise to do whatever the hell that guy wants, because they have their guy for the next 15 years.
Well, they do got whatever they want. I don't know if I'm going to buy into that. Like, we're going to make a stand about contract before the playoff game? I mean, man, you talk about a distraction.
Look at how, he got sacked 16 times. You don't have to make it publicly.
No.
You don't have to make it publicly.
I know, but you don't have to do it. Okay, all right. I mean, but still, we know how that goes. It's going to come out publicly. I mean, there's no way something like that is going to, like, you know, I'm not going to play a playoff game unless you give me that.
No, I'm not saying that.
All right, you just want it done before that? That's what you're saying?
I'm going to say, look, what's right is right. What's right is right, and I want my contract before I play in my first playoff game after my third season. Not that he's going to hold out. Just take the stand. I don't think anybody's ever even taken the stand and said, I want this.
No.
You want to keep me happy? You want me to be here for the next 15 years? You'll do this. If you don't want me to be happy, if you want me to be thinking about other options, then you won't do it. And look, I know that it's his love fest, and Joe Burrow is from Ohio, and it's great, and everybody in Cincinnati's happy, except they didn't win the Super Bowl, but they think the future is bright. Hey, Joe Burrow is going to take care of business for himself, and the Bengals are either going to meet him halfway or he will start thinking about his options. He will. That and it's consistent with that kind of that understated swagger that he doesn't care who he pisses off. He says what he believes, and he hasn't been put in a position yet where he's had to do it. And I think the hope will be that the Bengals don't put him in a position where he ever has to.
Right.
That you take care of me. You do right by me. Go get me offensive lineman this year. And when it's time for me to get my compensation before I put my body in harm's way in the playoffs after the 2022 season, you take care of me. Period.
Yeah.
I don't think it's crazy, and I don't think it's wrong. And it's consistent with all the arguments we ever make on behalf of players getting what they deserve.
No, I agree with you there. I guess I just misunderstood the way you framed it the first time around. But yeah,
I mean, he's not going to hold out.
Yeah,
although if he does, I think it'd be awesome.
They're going to take care of him. I mean, everything that just looks at you look at it right now at face value, it looks like it's going right down the road of Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. You know, they realize what they got there. You know, we've already called him, the crown jewel twice, you know, in the show to start. He is. I mean, he's the guy in Cincinnati. He's the guy that has changed everything, like we've joked about. The uniforms look cooler. You know, he's the new young guy on the block where the young kids want to be Joe Burrow. I mean, you know, like I've told you, my little boy, yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes one, but it was Joe Burrow too. He wanted to root for the Rams going in the whole week for the Super Bowl. But, man, he got to that stadium and he saw the pictures of Joe Burrow and he likes Joe Burrow and he said, the hell with it, I'm going with Joe Burrow. You know, I mean, he's one of those guys, again, that's got that million-dollar smile like Mahomes, like Steph Curry. I mean, so I don't think they're going to mess around here. They know what they got. I would expect that something significant, whether it's signed or not by playoffs next year, they know it's on the table. We're getting close. You know, the writing's on the wall. I would be absolutely shocked if they don't do right by Joe Burrow.
Plus, Joe.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, plus, like, he's an Ohio guy, like you said. I think that even puts more pressure on the Bengals to make sure it gets done and that they keep one of their own there in one of this, you know, the great cities of Ohio.
Hey, it took a great player like T.J. Watt to get the Steelers to change their ways.
Yeah,
Joe Burrow may be able to get the Bengals to change their ways in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways that need to be changed by the Bengals organization. They have fallen into Burrow and Chase, and now you got to do right by the fact that you have the potential to have a historic run. You don't just sit back and let Burrow and Chase do it. You've got to really work to put the team around them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that's the real thing. Like we saw, hey, even Kansas City last year went to the Super Bowl. Wasn't good enough. Not good enough to have that pass protection, right? We saw a team go through really actually worse than what Joe Burrow had to deal with last week. I mean, really. Mahomes had to deal with worse, except Mahomes was just more slippery and a better mover to where he avoided, you know, being sacked 7 times. And I don't even know how many times he got sacked. I don't remember from last year. But it was the same type of talk. We went into the offseason going, they got to fix that. That's not fair to Mahomes. All he did was run around and save the team the last 8 weeks of the year last year. And that's the kind of the way it felt for Burrow coming down the stretch of the season. It really did, especially when we got into the playoffs. We got to the cream of the crop and some of those defensive linemen, you know, I mean, some of those defensive lines just absolutely, you know, dominated Cincinnati up front. And he got away with it against the Titans. Tannehill made some, you know, interceptions. They made enough plays in the pass game. You know, the second week, he just, you know, the AFC Championship barely got away with it. You know, got out on the edge and ran for some big, you know, third downs 4 times. But as we, you know, and we talk about all the time, you're going to face that team that's your kryptonite, and they finally got it. The team that, oh, you did break the pocket, but it doesn't matter. You're not going to turn the corner on us because we have Von Miller and Aaron Donald, and we'll run right down the line of scrimmage, and you won't be able to scramble or do that. He wasn't as effective against this group, right? He only had the 1 or 2 scrambles, really. And, you know, that's the big thing. They got to figure that out and make a move like you talked about earlier. Maybe make a trade to get an Orlando Brown, like the Chiefs did, or, you know, sign Brandon Scherff, who's going to be a free agent right guard. He's going to be out there. Give him top dollar for the position. Start showing your team that we're going to go all in and we're going for the Super Bowl, and give Joe Burrow the confidence that you're going to protect him so he does feel good, and maybe he doesn't, you know, make you pay him the $46 million a year if you do right by him, and maybe he'll take just a little less to have the good offensive line and do the things we've seen Patrick Mahomes do for his contract.
Here's the other thing to remember, too. As the new TV contracts take root, the numbers are going to go up and up and up.
Right.
So the cap goes up, the pay goes up, $50 million, $55 million. It's going to get higher and higher. You've already got guys making more per year than what the salary cap initially was back in 93, 94.
That's
and
crazy.
It's going to keep going
it's
up and up
crazy.
Because there's so much money. So it was like, remember the first year they had one, it was $43 million or something like that.
I mean, I remember my dad's last season in the NFL, 1993, and that was the year, right? Troy Aikman signed like an 8-year, $55 million deal, and people's heads were blowing off. They were literally like, what? He's getting $55 million over 8 years? And we're getting to the point now, like you're talking about, we're right around the corner from quarterbacks making $50 million a year. It's insane how far it's come.
Well, and it's all because of the money that keeps pouring into the sport. It's good for the owners, it's good for the players, because they roughly share everything 50-50. Another guy who's in line to maybe get a little bit more, Matthew Stafford entering the final year of his contract, total compensation for 2022 of $22 million. Something's wrong with that picture.
Right.
But that I assume that will get taken care of in time. For now, here's Stafford, and this is quite a get for a podcast known as The Morning After with Kelly Stafford. Exclusive.
Exclusive.
Hey, dear. Hey, dear, can we have a conversation? Let me turn the microphone on before you start. Yeah.
It's good for my brand, honey.
Matthew Stafford talking about Super Bowl 56 MVP Cooper Kupp.
Cooper and I were talking about last night just all the time we spend together.
Yeah.
And he being just the stud that he is, he woke up this morning and decided to do some math. And he said 70 hours during training camp, 15 hours a week for 22 weeks, 330 during season. Somehow the 330 plus 70 got to 500, might be 400, but I think he's adding something else in there. But he just said 500 hours of extra time on the season that we spent together. Not with coaches, not with anybody else, just us two kind of watching tape, talking ball, figuring it out. He said it's about 21 full days worth of prep. And that's what makes that guy special.
Yeah, somehow they rounded up from 400 to 500. It's still a lot of extra time. But that's what you got to do. That we talk about that all the time.
That's
what
right.
is your level of commitment?
Right.
How much time are you spending on details? Knowing when to do what to do based upon what the other team is doing. And part of that is fun. Finding the spots. It's the challenge. You know what you can do physically, but you have to be able to match it up to what the other side is doing. And if you find those openings, and if you put in the work, and the work is required to find those openings, you're going to be more effective. And the question is, how badly do you want it? How much time are you going to put in? You know what Tom Brady always said?
Right.
Are you willing to give your life over to it? Because I am.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that's what's cool about the Rams football team. I think that's why they're easy to root for. It starts with the coach. He's one of those guys, like Tom Brady's quote. It's life. They're going to do whatever they got to do. Cooper Kupp, it's the same thing. He's going to take like 5 days off, and he'll be thinking about football again, by the end of this week. And what do I got to do? And, I should probably work out and train. That's how you can create a special connection in such a short period of time. You got to have, the fortitude and the mental toughness and the work ethic, like Brady or Matt Stafford, to do the extra things. Hey, let's stay out after practice. Hey, let's go, it's before training camp, but let's get 2 weeks of work together before training camp starts so we're on the same page so we can hit training camp running and going, not like, we're still getting rhythm in week three. It's those little things that do put you over the top. And I think that's what's cool about the Rams, because I think between those two, even Van Jefferson, Robert Woods when he's healthy, Odell's that way, even though they got these stars, Aaron Donald, Floyd, Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey, they love football. That's what's really cool about the Los Angeles Rams, and that's why it works. They wanted to win for each other, and I think they got a lot of guys that, they like themselves a lot, but they like team and winning and dominate and be the king of the NFL as well, and they're able to check their egos at the door and do those type of things. I think that's why it's fun for the Rams, or at least it's easy to root for the Rams.
And the challenge becomes, once you've climbed to the top of the mountain, you've done it once, you go back to the bottom of the mountain and you do it again.
Yeah.
And it's it's what we just did. And, by the way, 31 other teams want to do the same thing. And the target on us is going to be even larger next year as we try to do it again. We're going to get the best out of everyone. That's going to be an issue for both of these teams, especially the Bengals.
Yes.
Just to go back to them.
The Bengals for sure, though. I'm with you, Mike.
They're going to have think about it. You got 6 games in your division. Ravens, Steelers, Browns. You used to be the team that they'd shrug at, especially
right.
the Ravens and the Steelers. Now they're all going to be gunning for you. Everybody on your schedule is going to circle the Bengals. Everybody on the schedule is going to circle the Rams. So it's going to take even more work, even more effort for both of these teams to be successful next year like they were this year.
No, I agreed. And I think it'll be more of a shock to the Bengals, because this was a storied run here down the stretch. It was awesome. It was cool. Nobody expected it, really. They rode the momentum of that. But you're right. It's going to be a different mindset next year. When you're in the Super Bowl, everybody's going to gun for you. And, especially if you're the champion. But even if you're in it, regardless, teams are going to just want to, especially early in the season, where are we at compared to the team that made it to the Super Bowl last year? And it's a young football team that's going to have, the burden of expectation on them a little bit. And I don't know, when it comes to the Rams, Mike, I feel a little bit like I did with the Chiefs a few years ago, where I feel like, not saying they're going to go back and win the Super Bowl, I just feel like they got so many studs and self-confidence in the way they are that they're going to be one of those teams that kind of like, I think, thrives with being like the hunted a little bit with the bullseye. They're going to be like, oh, great. Hey, the biggest show in town's here. So what? Bring it. I think that's the kind of team they are a little bit. I don't see them buckling under the pressure of being the Super Bowl champion. You know, I got two different feels, I guess, as far as it comes to the Bengals and Rams. What do you think about that?
Well,
you see the Rams being that way, or you think it's going to be tough?
We got some big decisions that have not been made
yet
by the Rams. Is Sean McVay going to be back? Is Aaron Donald going to be back? If both of those guys are gone, that changes everything.
Of course, right.
For the Los Angeles Rams. So I want to wait and see how that plays out. It
OBJ, he'll be back. How's that going to go?
Hey,
you're right.
Speaking of guys who go by initials, MDS from PFT pointed out yesterday that when you look at when Odell Beckham Jr. tore his ACL during the 2020 season and when he was cleared to play in 21, that same timeline for the same injury to the same knee this year, he misses all of the season. He misses all of it. So he's starting from square one all over again. And, you know, you've never had the torn ACL, but you've been around guys who have rehabbed that injury. I mean, you rehabbed something more serious. But the ACL rehab is grueling. It's difficult. And to think that you've done it, you had the new ACL, you did everything you could to get back to the point where you could be the player that you were, and now you have to do it all over again. It's heartbreaking to think what this guy's going to have to go through over the next year.
No doubt about it. It's a brutal injury, especially for a wide receiver. You know, you said it right. It's a grueling process of getting everything strong in that knee. Then you get to a point where you go, oh, wait, I'm pretty good. I'm a normal functioning human. Look, I can walk and run. But then you get out there and go, wait, now it's time to run like an NFL receiver. And you go, well, damn, I can't really cut and explode the way I need to as an NFL receiver. It's cool when I'm hanging out with my friends and I'm running around a little, but there's a different level of expectation there. And, yeah, that's where it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, we are in an era where we see people come back from the ACL 7-8 months, you know, around that time period. Hopefully this will be faster. But it is rare that we see ACL same leg 2 years in a row this day and age. We don't see that a whole lot. That's a little concerning to me. And the last thing, Mike, you know I'll say it. I've been waiting to say this all week. Can we get rid of mother effing field turf in football? Can we get rid of it? I want to say it's so bad because it deserves an F word really bad. But can we get rid of it? You know, we talk about all the money and stuff, and the owners don't want to spend money on anything. Owners, you will save so much money and won't have to sign extra players on your roster, and you'll make money that way. I know you'll have to, you know, maybe take care and cut the lawn every now and then and pay the bill there for the grass. But can we get grass fields in every stadium? I've had enough. You know, like we've talked about before. You know, the great soccer players over in Europe won't even play. It's in their contract. They will not play on field turf. We are ruining people's careers. We worry about, you know, player safety and all that. None of the players like to play on field turf over grass. None. It's 0.000. They got to change it. It's ridiculous. And I blame it on the turf and the NFL for part of the reason Odell got hurt.
And you know, this pops up every once in a while, and it is incomprehensible to me. Even if you're cheap, you have an investment. Even if you view these guys as robots, and you don't care about them as human beings, and you become completely desensitized to it because it's this constant churn. We get 90 guys in the offseason. We tell 37 of them to go away, and then throughout the season, we get rid of this guy. This guy gets injured. They're no longer humans. They're just replacement parts. You still want those parts to work. Even if you don't view them as human beings, you still want them to work.
Right.
You want your investment that you've made in these parts, you want to put them in a position, in an environment, in a machine that allows them to not break.
Right.
That's what's so ridiculous
about it. It's crazy.
Like, how much could it cost? And hey, we saw that stadium. We saw it. Okay, right. It's going to be the magnet for a Super Bowl every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Why didn't they build it with the Allegiant Stadium or the State Farm Stadium?
I know.
Slide in a tray of grass from somewhere. Have it come up from underground. Have it drop from the ceiling.
Right.
I mean, hell, everything else they have there,
it's
they could have
notch.
Figured out some way to get grass in there and take the grass out and put something else in if they wanted to. They could do it all if they wanted to do it.
I know. It's frustrating. It really bothers me as an ex-player. It bothered me when I was playing in the NFL 10 years ago, or now it's 11 or 12 years ago. Holy crap. But it bothered me then.
You're getting
old. Yeah, I know. And it bothered players then. It did. I can tell you that even if we had a day, whether I was working for New England or playing for Denver, the Titans, if we had a day where, hey, we're going to go on the field turf today and practice there or go indoors, the players hated it. I mean, especially the linemen. They hated it. Oh, man. Really? I'm going to go in there. It feels different.
What about it? Tell us. Tell us what the difference
there's
is.
There's just less give in the ground when you make cuts. You know, of course, grass, again, really cut well, good grass. Like, your cleats go into it. You make tough cuts. But you feel a little give. You know, again, you're wearing the same cleat, but now you're in a field turf. And, yes, there's those black rubber pebbles and everything. But you can at times, yeah, the cuts can be very jarring. There is no give. That cleat gets in there, and it's stuck in there. You know, so there's that issue, let alone because of the rubber pebbles and everything. There's a lot of, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, Mike, but there's reshock, right? Like the rubber sends, you know, forces back into your feet, your ankles, your calf muscles, your quads, to where your legs feel more tired, you know, playing on that surface as compared to grass. Like, I remember the first few times I was on it, I was cramping in my calf muscles and my shin, you know, like in the second quarter of a game. And I was like, man, what the hell is going on with me? I've never had this, but it was that. So those are the issues there. It's just too jarring, especially for wide receivers and running backs who got to plant that foot in the ground hard and make really sharp, explosive cuts.
And we saw that step by Odell Beckham Jr. that really didn't look all that egregious.
Right.
Blow out the ACL.
Right. It's just like he steps, the foot got stuck, there's no give, and then the only give left was the knee. So the knee gives. And that's where it stinks. You know, it was a little bit of a bad throw. So he's planted that left foot in the ground to kind of readjust his body. But as he did that, there was no give. It doesn't move. And this is, to me, just where I wish it would change. You know, to your point. And again, we're talking about the NFL, who doesn't want to get extra referees, no sky judge, no full-time referees, not have people to check the gauge of the air. You know, again, these are things that so they're worried about saving money there, but they don't worry about, wait, I have a guy on my team who's making $2 million a game, and if he gets hurt, I still got to pay him his $2 million a game, and yet now I'm going to have to sign somebody else and pay that person money too. And that, to me, is where expenses get up there for NFL teams and owners. I mean, I know that. You know, when, yeah, a lot of injuries, we got to sign extra players. Now we have to pay them along the players we already had on the roster. And that's where I don't get it. And I'm sure cutting the lawn and painting the grass would be a lot less money than having to sign all these extra players and pay people not to play because they're hurt from field turf.
And you're not going to have your best players.
Exactly.
Regardless of the money that you got to spend on someone else, and you're not getting value from the guys you've already paid, your best players aren't available to play because they're injured because you're too damn cheap. And I'd love to know why, of all the other bells and whistles they have at SoFi Stadium, why they didn't come up with a way to have real grass on that field. With everything else that was a priority for Stan Kroenke.
I know, it's funny. I know. I don't get it either.
Why wasn't that on the radar screen
because
for Kevin Demoff or one of these other masterminds that put this thing together, this football palace? Was it unsightly to have a big tray of grass outside? You know, who cares the rest of the days of the week? You slide it in for the football games. It's in there. It's not taking up any space. It's not an eyesore when somebody drives by SoFi Stadium and say, boy, it would look a lot better if there wasn't a football field outside. Why is there a football field outside? It's just stupid. There's no reason. There's no reason. I agree with you. Even in a dome stadium, we know of at least two, and maybe there's more, but I know of at least two, the one in Phoenix and the one in Las Vegas, where the tray comes out. It all goes out, and they can take care of it in the open air. They can water it.
Is it a water shortage thing in L.A.? Is that another one? It's grass, even though it's indoors. Now, I know the roof opens, so they could do it that way. But I want to say Houston also has that same thing, where they can roll it in and roll it back out. There's something there. But to your point, we have the technology to do it, regardless. So that there's no excuse. And, yeah, I don't know why they didn't do it. They opted not to. Probably why. Because you know, they could get eight more suites on field level right there and get an extra $8 million from everybody in the world. That's why, probably. And you know it has something to do with that. Wait, we can have the rolling field, or we can have eight more suites and make more money. Ah, screw the players in the field. Let's get the more suites. I mean, that probably is what it came down to.
The other thing, too, that I want to mention before we move on, those little rubber pellets are toxic,
no
they believe.
Crap.
And there have been studies as to whether and to what extent they cause cancer in soccer players, goalies who get them kicked into their mouth. You have an open wound that has them kicked into them. They are old tires that have been ground up. And, hey, at least they found a use for some of the old tires that are
great.
All
right.
over the place.
Right.
But if it's going to make people sick over the long haul, and they never really even seemed to think about it before they said, well, we need some cushion for this new fake grass we've come up with. What should we do? Hey, let's ground up a bunch of tires. Hey, great idea. We got a bunch of old tires, you know, in a pile out here. Let's do it. Yeah, and it may be causing problems that way. So something slightly less toxic would be the beverages that may be consumed during the Super Bowl parade. That was another topic that Matthew Stafford touched on in an exclusive appearance
I love
on
it.
His wife's
hey,
podcast.
Hey, honey, are we going to get drunk in this parade
whether or
what?
Not they'll be drinking and throwing the trophy around during the parade. Here's Stafford.
Are you going to be like Tom Brady-ing it up at the parade like he let loose last year on the boat?
I think so.
All right. So
yes!
Like you're going to let it rip. You're going to let the ride, right?
Probably not to the level that you would want, but
I mean, if Tom Brady can get carried out of a boat parade, you can have a little
no,
fun.
I'll have a good time with that. I got no problem with that.
What's your drink of choice?
Kind of anything, but usually a vodka guy, big Sunny and soda guy.
There you go. Shout it out. Sunny vodka. What's that?
It's
good.
It's
I don't think it's out yet. Sunny vodka?
I don't know. Anything. To be honest.
This week, anything, whatever's in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do a little tequila. I'll do a little vodka.
They sound fun.
Matthew Stafford.
I'm ready to hang out
with
them. Closet
drunk. I know. Well, I kind of like it.
Well, it's funny. It sounds like the wife wants him to be a drunk. That's what's even cooler. He's like, well, you know, I'm going to drink, but probably not to the level you want me to. It's
Matthew, you're much more fun when you're drunk.
Oh, I love it. I've always heard he can put beers.
Hey, I remember when Aaron Rodgers struggled to drink a little cup of beer, there was a video of Stafford with one of those big,
Stafford can pour it. Yeah.
Just zoom straight down.
Yeah, I've heard he can throw them down pretty good. So I don't think he'll have any issue. You know, now maybe he's a little more mature. He doesn't do it like he used to. But hey, for this one, seriously, how drunk would you get if you won the Super Bowl? Right? I mean, really. I would be like, who knows what, you know, I mean, that would be the greatest day of my life. It really would. I'd have so much fun and drink and smoke so many daddy cigars. It would be the greatest day ever.
Well, I mean, it's like a normal day for you, so you have to find a way to reach the next level. Let me tell you something. There it is. Well done.
Boom.
Well done.
Look at that.
Right, there it goes.
Not even a
right
problem.
Right down. Take that, Aaron Rodgers. Oh, by the way, I now have won as many Super Bowls as you, too.
Oh, man,
Aaron
that's
Rodgers.
A big thing now on the online.
Put that in your,
seriously.
In your glass and drink it, Aaron Rodgers.
Seriously. That's all over social media. Matt Stafford now has as many championships as Aaron Rodgers. That's got to be killing him.
Listen, I've always been a Matt Stafford fan, and one thing I'm reminded of that we hear the conversation between the newlyweds, not newlyweds, when they were newlyweds and on their way to their honeymoon, there was something on social media where Kelly Stafford was chiding her husband because he was checking PFT when they were on their way to their honeymoon.
That's years ago. He likes football. He knows what's going on in the league. He really does. That's one thing I learned being in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago, you know, spending that day with the Rams. Between all the things I heard McVay and then just talking to Stafford just for a few minutes, he's very up to date with the league. He knows everything that's going on. And if you know everything that's going on, just like most people in the NFL, now they don't want to admit it because a lot of them don't like you, but they look at PFT, like, on
the
regular.
Isn't that ridiculous that they won't admit it?
I know.
Like, Because I might say something they
yes,
don't like,
right?
That may be accurate and truthful,
yep.
But they don't want it. They want the emperor ride ass naked down the street, and nobody say anything. Because of that, they're sufficiently petted that they won't acknowledge where they get their information. Because I may have said something at some point that they didn't like.
Yeah,
that's
you know,
it's actually kind of humorous to me.
It is humorous. There is no doubt. But you've cornered the market on where people go when they want to stay up to date. Listen, we had. What was this? I'm going to pat you on the back and really stroke your ego today. I mean, this is disgusting.
No, that's
but,
all right.
But
that's
Carson right. Palmer's, you know, younger brother.
Jordan.
Jordan's a great guy. You know, one of the things he told us, right, last week at Media Row when we were doing the show, he said the one thing he teaches the young quarterbacks after he starts teaching them football and mechanics and doing all that kind of stuff is going, now you got to learn the league a little bit and what's going on. And he makes them pay attention to PFT. So they know, like, what's going on in the league and have a clue about the business they're about to be involved in. I thought that was very smart, but, you know, kudos to you, man. I think that speaks to what you built here.
Yeah, he didn't have to say it. It was nice.
It was.
And it kind of surprised me. But you know, I remember back in the early days when I started hearing from people, that, you know, everybody's reading this stuff, and I'm thinking, why? Why? Why would they? And it took me, like, 5 years to come to terms with the fact that, for whatever reason, people were reading it. But I, you know, a couple of things that were said to me off air last week, and I can't say who said them, but it if anything, has made me more determined to say what needs to be said when it needs
well,
to be said.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of people out there who are willing to say what needs to be said.
Right. No, I think that's the number one thing I get from people in the league all the time, even from people who maybe have been annoyed by your copy-paste, snarky comment at
like
times.
Like Kyle.
Well,
Kyle.
Just
Hi,
the,
Kyle.
Yeah, other friends, too. It just, you know, and I haven't talked to Kyle in a while. It's not Kyle. But people do love the fact that, you know, you and I fight against the league and don't let the league just get away with bull crap. And I think there is a level of respect from some coaches and some people in higher management that like that we don't let them get away with their BS.
Well, and I don't pay attention to a lot of other shows. I never want to be accused of taking people's bits. I don't even want it to soak into my brain. And frankly, after we've done it for 2 hours, why do I want to listen to someone else do it for 2 hours? I don't care. We do it. We talk about it. I know what's going on. I don't need to hear someone else talk about it. But I get the impression there aren't many other places where people will say what needs to be said. And either they, hey, and this is credit to NBC that they let us do it. It's
it
not
is.
Just an issue of,
right.
We don't have to be brave. Like, every time we sit down and go off on the league, it's not like we're thinking, oh crap, we're going to get in trouble for this.
Huh?
We joke
say?
About it. We joke about it sometimes, but we never really have to worry. I mean, the only time I was mildly worried at all last week was when I did the thing about how they hid the Alvin Kamara existence in his locker in the NFL Experience
right.
in the clumsiest way possible. Everybody knows he wears number 41. Let's just turn around his jersey so it doesn't say Kamara, and let's just put Cam Jordan on top. Are you kidding me? How Bush League can you be? But I thought they'd be mad about that because, you know, they gave us access to the NFL Experience all week long as we promoted their sport. That's the other side of it, too. Anytime anybody from the league gets mad at me, I have the card ready to play if I need to, and I don't have to do it very often. Hey, butthole, I promote your product every day of my life. From the moment I get up to the moment I go to bed, I am writing stuff that helps people better understand and enjoy your product. You benefit from it, so get off my ass. I'm ready to say that at any moment when they decide they're going to give me a hard time.
I
just said it now, and I'll say it every day if I have to.
I think most of them realize that.
Well, hopefully.
I do. I mean, listen, we've had Roger Goodell come up to us and thank us for what we do for the league and all that. I'm sure he's probably looking at us also going, you sons of mother, you jerks, you guys call me out on everything. I'm sure he's saying that too. But
thanks.
I think he understands
thanks for your coverage.
What you're doing. Yes, right. Thanks for your coverage, you two jerks.
What was I going to say earlier, and you got me off track? I had a little tequila last night.
Cool.
Here's what happened.
Yes.
And I hate to say this, but I have to. I'm honest. I'm not going to lie about what happened. Emmett Smith brought that beautiful bottle of Herradura tequila
right,
on Friday.
Right.
And he cracked it open, took it out of the box, cracked it open, poured some out for him, poured some out for me. I took one little drink. It was really good. And he left the bottle. So I took the bottle with me to the hotel on Friday night. And I thought, you know, I'll drink a little bit of it Friday night, have a little bit of it Saturday, have a little bit of it Sunday. I never had a drop of it Friday, Saturday, or Sunday night.
Why?
I didn't have any. I just, it's like, well, because we had to get up so damn early on Saturday and Sunday. We had to leave the hotel at 6:45 in the morning on Sunday. Are you kidding me? Now, the time change would tend to do that because we started the show at 10 o'clock local time. But I never had a chance. I never had a chance where I felt comfortable to drink it. By Sunday night, I was so spent, I didn't even have the energy to open the bottle.
Right.
So what I did was, I was telling my son last night, like, I was tempted to just leave all my luggage and start over again. I just didn't even feel like packing. I called my wife and I said, would it be a problem if I just left my suitcase here and just took my bags and came home? Like, it's just shirts and pants. We can get more shirts and pants. I don't want to bring this bag. So anyway, I took the bottle of tequila and I'd left it. I figure, you know, somebody's getting a bottle of tequila and only has that much out of it. Hopefully somebody took it. It's not like, I mean, I know it's open. And you're like, yeah, it's some stranger's tequila.
Yeah,
like,
there's
what
no
would I
way.
Put in there?
No one's gonna drink that. What, are you crazy? What are you?
Why not? You smell it. It's tequila.
We're talking to the guy who was afraid to be in the same, you know, 1,000 by 1,000 foot room with somebody. Now you think somebody with COVID is gonna go around and go, well, let me have that person's open tequila. You're crazy.
Somebody's gonna take a drink of it and say it's still tequila. Tastes like Splenda gets drunk like scotch. They're gonna drink some of that tequila.
Okay.
I would have.
And no,
it's tequila to kill the COVID.
I'm throwing the challenge flag on that. There is no freaking way you would open or pop open a stranger's tequila that somebody has already drank. No chance Mike Floria does that. None.
I wouldn't, but if I was 21 years old and I was working at a hotel.
Then you would, maybe.
If it was me, if it was me at age 21 and I had a part-time job working at a hotel and the cleaning staff brought down this bottle of tequila and said, hey, some guy from NBC left this bottle of tequila and he's only drank that much of it, I'd say, give me the mother effing tequila. We're going to go have a party. I'm telling you. If the first shot doesn't kill me, I know the 20th one will, but if the first one doesn't kill me, I'll move on to number two, three, and four.
Yeah. I hear you. All right.
What in the hell are we talking about? My son said to me, why didn't you bring it home? I said, what am I going to do with it?
This is a good one, too.
Put it in my suitcase. There's David Bakhtiari.
This is not, here it is. Look at this.
Well done, control room. There's two of them.
Not even a problem.
He wants a party with Matthew Stafford. It's on you, Aaron Rodgers. Let's see you drink your tequila.
Oh, my gosh.
Or not your tequila, your beer.
What is this? I can't even believe this. Dude, the fact that he held up one finger and did that, I don't know what that is. I just can't even believe that. I really can't. It's like
there's something that you have to do where you just kind of there's something with your you just have to you can't drink it. You just have to open your mouth and you do something with your throat where you just pour it straight down.
I know. It's like Rodgers like was like worried about like his perception out there. Like it was like halfway through he was like, "Wait, this won't look good if I chug this."
What a shock.
Let me act like it's very hard cuz I'm not a good drinker.
I'm stunned.
Man, here's Tom. Here it comes. Man, that can't just
we
be
get
liquor.
To Tommy's.
That can't just be liquor. That's got to be some weed with the liquor. I don't care what. Somebody gave him some weed. Look, he ain't even got the giggles there. You don't get the giggles when you're drunk like that.
Yes, I do.
You do?
Oh, yes, I do.
You get the giggles
like that? Yes, I do.
Oh man, yes, that is one of the greatest clips ever. I mean, that really, it's Weekend at Bernie's with Tom Brady. It's amazing.
Oh, man. I feel like I've been drinking this morning. I haven't. Please, I have not. I'm just in a good mood. It is so good to be home. And it's like the longer I'm home, the better I feel. And anyway, we had some fun there.
We did.
The first 52 minutes of the program. Now we got a lot of work to
do. Now we
got
to go to the combine in 2 weeks. Combine, 2 weeks. We're going to go there.
Have fun.
You're such a jerk. I guess I'll be by myself.
Have fun. Mike McCarthy had some things to say. Have fun. Mike McCarthy had some things to say yesterday to Rich Eisen about the narrative surrounding the Dallas Cowboys. We'll discuss that next. There we are.
There he is.
There we are. I don't look like I'm giggling.
That wobbly Florio again.
I didn't know I was as tall as you. We'll be right back.
Jerry Jones, in a story written on DallasCowboys.com, was talking about Dan Quinn coming back to your fold and mentioning how Sean Payton and Jason Garrett stuck around for a long time as assistants in Dallas because, quote, every one of those three coaches have said they'd love to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So my point is that has, in my mind, a lot of logic as to why they might not take a job now rather than one or wait and see how the cards go in the future. The follow-up question was kind of obvious. Like, what about your current head coach, Mike McCarthy? And the quote was, Mike knows that someday somebody other than him will be coach of the Cowboys. What do you think about that supposition, Coach Mike McCarthy?
Oh, so we have an hour, correct? This narrative broke out. I think it, in reflection to the relationship that Dan and I do have, you know, he just said, hey, man, if I'm not comfortable with this narrative, you know, if you really feel like I need to take one of these jobs, you know, just be honest with him. And we kind of laughed about it, and I just said, Dan, 10 to 12 years ago, I'd tell you, please get the hell out of here. I don't want to deal with this. But the reality of it is, I'm about winning. He's about winning. And the best thing for the Cowboys is for Dan Quinn to be here. You know, Jerry's the owner, he's the GM, and I mean, he's always taking a 360-degree view of everything. And I think it's like anything in life. You know, we have a lot of one-on-one conversations. We discussed all these things. You know, I never once felt that I was not going to be the head coach moving forward. Are these narratives unusual? Yeah, absolutely. I've never dealt with anything like this. Do I wish I didn't have to come on here and answer questions about it? Yeah, no doubt about it. I wish we were talking about something else, but it is part of our landscape.
It's part of his landscape because it's the way things work on his football team.
That's what Jerry Jones does.
Right.
That's not normal. Right? That's only a Cowboy thing.
What other owner touts an assistant coach as a potential future head coach of the team? I mean, Jerry Jones does that. And I think he kind of likes that. He likes the fire that it lights under his current guy. And there is a fire under Mike McCarthy, even though he didn't get fired. There's definitely pressure on McCarthy between Dan Quinn on the inside and Sean Payton on the outside. He's got plenty of guys to worry about, and the idea is that'll motivate him to be better at his job.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, you know, Mike McCarthy understands the situation. You're right, this is the Cowboy thing. This does not go on with other organizations. You know, Dan Quinn, to Mike McCarthy's point, no doubt makes the Cowboys better. You know, they got something working there. I don't like this notion that, like, Dan Quinn made this decision, you know, just because he wanted to be back in Dallas and his defensive coordinator. I mean, come on. Throw the challenge flag, the BS flag, whatever you want. He didn't get a chance. He wasn't going to get one of these jobs. Once he realized that, he said they made all the right comments to go, oh, I want to go back and be a part of the Dallas Cowboys. And they switched around, you know, the framework of all the talk to basically sound like, hey, we love him so much and he loves it so much here that he doesn't even want one of these jobs out there. No, negative Ghost Rider, stop the BS train right there. Nobody offered him a job. Come on, get the hell out of here. He didn't turn down a head coaching job to go, I want to be the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys. No, that did not happen. Absolutely not. But it is good for the Dallas Cowboys that he's back. They are building something. We saw a dramatic improvement. The team, the personnel on the defensive side certainly fits Dan Quinn's style of coaching and the scheme he plays. And it's a good thing. And I think you're right, Mike. I do think there's something about Jerry Jones that he likes, that there's a, you know, like we talk about, when you got sometimes a good backup quarterback to a quarterback, it puts the hot poker by their butt a little bit. Makes them get on their P's and Q's and dot the I's and cross the T's and all that crap. And I think that's what Jerry Jones probably likes.
And as you've said, it's not like they were the 85 Bears. They were just
right.
Dramatically better than the crap show that they were in 2020. So they still have work to do to get to where they want to be. The bottom line is they fell far short of Jerry Jones' expectations. And a lot of that is on the head coach, and he's going to need to get better in 2022. The team needs to perform better, or they're going to have to worry about change. He's going to have to worry about change, whether it's from within or from without. And on that point, from without, here's McCarthy from yesterday talking about the Sean Payton looming presence, and Payton from last week on PFT Live talking about the reality that Mike McCarthy's in a position where he's going to be looking over his shoulder and seeing the former Saints coach.
about Sean Payton's narrative also. It's been discussed.
You have discussed that with him. Is anything you can share that you have discussed?
The gist of the conversation was, you and I are in this, back to back, and it's a partnership, and just focus on what we need to do moving forward. He made some, personal comments about, how he feels about it, but that's really for him and I. But I'm very, very comfortable with our relationship and our dialogue.
Have you called or will you call Mike McCarthy and say, don't worry about me, don't think about me, don't look over your shoulder, just go do your thing? Have you had that conversation?
I haven't. And you know what? That's a good idea, because I felt like it took place for a while with Jason Garrett, a good friend of mine who I coached at the Giants, still a close friend to this day, and I consider Mike someone who's a close friend. And Mike's done it long enough. We both entered the league as head coaches the same year in 06. We're of the same age, and we're of the same background. And look, our paths have been different, but I'm his big fan. And I think he's one of those guys who's a fantastic coach. I had this whole conversation with the Saints ownership the week prior to the wild card round, and Mrs. Benson said, take a week, go on vacation to Mexico, and before you come back with that answer, because I knew then I wanted to step away, and sure enough, that first round game, Dallas loses, and I'm like, ah, it would have been so much easier had I had the Tuesday before that.
And that shows you he's fully aware of how he's connected to the Dallas Cowboys. Look,
of course.
3 years ago, Jerry Jones tried to hire him while Jason Garrett was still the coach.
Right.
And I think from Peyton's perspective, it's all's fair. Look, there's 32 of these jobs. There's only one Dallas Cowboys organization, and the owner's going to decide who the coach is.
That's right.
And just because one of your friends is currently the coach, if the owner decides to move on from that guy to you, you're not going to say, sorry, but that's my friend. I can't do that to my friend.
Right.
Friendship goes out the window when it comes to coaching the Dallas Cowboys.
Right. Well, I mean, what's the old saying, right? Like, all is fair in love and war, right? I mean, this is just business. He's not, like, personally trying to attack Mike McCarthy. He's not calling Jerry Jones and being like, hey, McCarthy stinks. He's not a good guy. He's not a good coach. You should hire me. No. He's just doing – Sean Payton's just doing Sean Payton. You know, this is – The Cowboys who have made this bet, and we know what we're dealing with Jerry Jones. I mean, to me, this is that's the guy to be worried about if I'm Mike McCarthy. Forget the Dan Quinn thing. To me, I will not be shocked if the season for the Cowboys does not meet the Jones family expectations, and that means another like wild card loss. But if the Jones expected, this is a championship NFC championship type team or a Super Bowl type team, I would think Mike McCarthy's going to be in trouble with Sean Payton out there. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt Jerry Jones had his eye on Sean Payton, or still does. And there's no doubt, if you talk to anybody who has any knowledge of the situation, that the Cowboys are on Sean Payton's radar. It's definitely the one team on his list he would love to coach in football, or the top two or three. Anybody I know that knows Sean Payton would tell you that as well. So that would be the one I'd look for, depending on how 2022 shapes up for the Cowboys.
As explained in the forthcoming book, Playmakers, and as we've previously discussed, it was a done deal unofficially 3 years ago before Anthony Davis, then of the New Orleans Pelicans, told Mickey Loomis, who was then the VP of basketball operations for the New Orleans Pelicans, he wanted out. And that's when Mickey Loomis said to Sean Payton, I can't do this now. I can't let you go. I can't be the common thread between Anthony Davis and Sean Payton leaving New Orleans. And that's when it fell apart. It was happening 3 years ago.
Right.
And, there's a sense it's going to happen in a year. He was so good, though, because I tried to ask him a tough question that wouldn't piss him off. And I thought it was a fair question. If you called Mike McCarthy and said, don't worry about me, he said, that's a good idea. Basically his answer was, no, I didn't, and I'm not going to. He better just pull up his big boy pants, because this is the way it works, baby. I mean, that was the message through all those words. He isn't going to do it. There's no reason to do it. I didn't do it with Jason Garrett. I'm not doing it with him.
Yeah.
Period.
No. It's not personal. Mike McCarthy's going to realize that. This is not like Sean Payton's trying to steal his job. Sean Payton's just sitting back. His results speak for themselves. That's the bottom line. Sean Payton
is an awesome football coach. He is arguably one of the – I mean, not arguably. He's one of the greatest offensive minds in the history of football, let alone everything else that he brings to a team. Motivation, toughness, physicality. You know, this is not just a guy that's into throwing for 5,000 yards like we've seen. I mean, they weren't that type of team the last 4 or 5 years. They've always shown great balance, even with Drew Brees at the end of the career. You know, they were still running the football, beating you up physically. Defense has been awesome for 4 or 5 years. That's all Sean Payton. The team is tough and physical because he's that. He's edgy and tough. And his players show, you know, they're a replica of him and his attitude. I love Sean Payton. I hope he's not out of football too long. I don't want him taking any jobs with ESPN, Monday Night Football, anything. I want him back in the NFL coaching an offense somewhere. And I hope that happens sooner rather than later.
By the way, he was great on Friday's show when you weren't there. Ron Rivera earlier in the day was great when you weren't there. I may have offered both of them your seat.
Shocker. Yeah, you're shocker. Yeah, real loyal guy over there. Real loyal guy. You're like the Jerry Jones of hosts, always looking for the next guy.
Got to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, right. The poker's by my butt.
I guarantee you, neither of them would swear on the air. I don't
agree with that. I think Sean Payton would get emotional at one point and say something. He's definitely. There's no way. He's like me. I think he's a potty mouth, but he just buttons it up the right way when he has to.
And I will say this. If you have watched, and I guess you could still watch, the All or Nothing on Amazon that featured the Panthers, you get Ron Rivera in the locker room at halftime, it's a different guy altogether.
Yeah,
and
right.
The paint peels off the walls.
That's right. When
Ron Rivera is around. Because he will let it fly when he needs to. All right, let's take a break. When we return, some expletives may be flying from a certain group of fans who are loyal to a certain quarterback of a team that wears aqua jerseys. Tuanon! Activate! Tuanon! They're coming after you, Sims. We'll be right back.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
This is an awesome day for me, and I'm damn sure going to make sure that when you look back on this day, you're going to be like, damn, that was one of the best days of my career, too, okay? But I'll earn that from you. There's a camera on us right now. Since you can't hear him, he's telling me how excited he is, and that there's no other coach he'd rather play for in the entire world, which I thought was nice since it was the first time I've really talked to him. It's on, bro. If you don't have eye black at home, you better go get some eye black, because we're going.
That was last week. Mike McDaniel, the new coach of the Miami Dolphins, FaceTiming with Tua Tagovailoa. McDaniel more recently said that Tua's skill set will be, quote, very successful in this offense. A lot of 3-yard passes then in the Mike McDaniel offense, apparently, for Tua Tagovailoa. Look, Tua has his moments. But, you know, I think people legitimately have concerns about where his ceiling is and how close he's ever going to get to it, whether it's because of physical limitations, arm strength, just everything, size, everything, the total package.
Right.
I still am astounded by the fact that the Dolphins took him over Justin Herbert. That blows me away. When you look at the two guys, just put them next to each other, and you already have a huge hill that Tua Tagovailoa has to climb to show that he's better than Justin Herbert. I know that size isn't everything, and there's plenty of great smaller quarterbacks, but it's a tough sell. So if you're Mike McDaniel, do you view it as an upgrade to go from a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo to Tua when you consider the differences between those two guys and the offense McDaniel's going to run?
Well, it's like there's an upgrade in some areas. Like Tua's certainly more athletic. And going to be able to get on the move as far as the bootlegs and some quarterback movement stuff that I think, you know, Shanahan and Mike McDaniel probably wanted to do more with Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is not the greatest mover in the world. So I think there is that aspect. But, man,
I look at it and go, it's the perfect fit for Tua. I mean, he really should count his blessings. I really think Mike McDaniel, that system going down there for him is perfect for him. I mean, what do we talk about the 49ers all the time? I mean, they don't do anything. They throw the ball 8 yards over the middle every play. Or Shanahan finds some crazy way to get Deebo Samuel in the flat or the reverses and the speed sweeps. But, man, we've gone through, you know, weeks in a season where you go, Jimmy Garoppolo really didn't throw the ball outside the numbers or down the field in three straight games other than like two or three plays in every game. That fits Tua. So I think between that, you know, their ability and what we've seen with, like, you know, Deebo Samuel with the 49ers, they got a guy in Jalen Waddle who's similar that way too. They're going to orchestrate an offense that'll fit Tua. The offense, I think, naturally fits Tua in a lot of ways. So we'll see where it goes. But again, as we're seeing with the 49ers, you know, you got to make some throws and some plays at some point. They're a Super Bowl team that has not had a quarterback that can make those two or three plays to get them over the hump. And that ultimately is what's been their issue, and that's why they're going to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, so that's the thing with Tua that we'll continue to evaluate as we go. Offense is good. That's great. But there's still going to be a handful of games where they're going to take away some of that stuff, and you got to make some throws, and that's, you know, what we both question.
Bottom line, great coaches take the players they have and they do things that get the most out of what they do well and cover up the things they don't do well. That's a big part of coaching. You take that lump of clay and you shape it into something that fits what you do, and you make what you do fit what that lump of clay is, if it really is just a lump that you have to try to make something out of. Let's do a little word association with these new quarterback coach marriages. We'll start with Mike McDaniel and Tua Tagovailoa. First word that comes to mind for you.
Well, I said savior that first when we talked about it just a second ago. I'll say it was savior again. I do. I look at Mike McDaniel, and I think that's part of the reason he was hired. I think they probably looked at it between him and Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore, that offense, they asked Dak Prescott to throw the ball in a more traditional way and make big throws down the field. Not to his game. Absolutely not. So they got the guy that went, wait, he came from an offense where they made 70 million ways to throw the ball right here, right there, right here, right there, right there, right there. That's all they did. That fits Tua perfect. And that's why I look at it as the savior word is what I'll go with there.
I still view it as temporary because I'm not buying any of the narratives that have been put out there by the Dolphins post the firing of Brian Flores, that everybody wanted Tua except Flores, and he's the reason that Tua's been down, and he's the reason that they wanted Deshaun Watson. No, they all wanted Deshaun Watson. Stephen Ross is the one who wants a franchise quarterback, and he's already come to the conclusion that Tua isn't. And they're going to give him a chance in this new offense. But if it doesn't work, you know, if he gets banged up, that's the one thing we haven't discussed. McDaniel was working with Garoppolo, who can't stay healthy. Tua has had issues staying healthy. So, you know, this new offense exposes you to contact, apparently, and Tua may end up not being able to play. So I think regardless, it's not going to last long, and eventually they're going to be looking again for a franchise quarterback, the guy that Stephen Ross covets. Not that he doesn't have other things to currently worry about, like, you know, maybe having to sell his team. Josh McDaniels and Derek Carr, first word that comes to mind.
Robots. I don't know. You know, that's the first thing. I think I look at Josh McDaniels, he's a robot. He really is. You know, he's like a Belichick. It's just everything's detailed, organized. He knows how to coach everything in the world, and he wants a robot at quarterback like Tom Brady. And we've seen Derek Carr, he's got some robotic tendencies. He can do that. I think that it'll actually work really well. I do. I look at Derek Carr, I just think the way he's handled himself in the Gruden offense, this is going to be a total mental flip around for the language of the offense, some of the rules of the offense. He's going to have some things where he with John Gruden, he's going to go, hey, that was cool. We used to do this with Gruden. And Josh McDaniels is going to go, oh, yeah? Well, I used to do this with Tom Brady, and my way is really cool. So watch this crap. And he's going to go, whoa, it is cool, but damn, there's a few more things to think about there. They got to rewire the robot a little bit, but these are two robots, I think, together that can do some things and do some damage in Las Vegas.
And you know what? I could try to think of a better word, but I like yours from the perspective of the player, because that's what you have to be successful in the Josh McDaniels offense.
Yeah.
You have to allow yourself to completely be programmed by McDaniels in everything you do, how you operate the offense, how you operate yourself when it's time to talk, everything it's the Stepford Patriot dynamic where you don't say anything that's ever going to cause any issues. And I feel like Derek Carr wants to please his coaches so badly.
Agreed.
That he tries to be maybe something other than what he really isn't, because he's trying to be exactly what it is his coaches are looking from him. He's dying to be that lump of clay that is molded, and he's willing to put himself in whatever position he needs to be in to satisfy whoever the coach is. That's good for Josh McDaniels. Derek Carr is going to be whatever McDaniels wants him to be, and apparently they like what they have in Carr because they're already talking about signing him to an extension. I saw somebody suggesting he's going to make $40 million a year, which seems like a little much, but okay. If McDaniels sees something there that could cause Carr to be the guy that McDaniels needs, and you know, McDaniels took that job. He could have waited again.
Yeah.
He'd been waiting a decade.
Right.
He saw something there in Las Vegas that made him take that job, and maybe he secretly, you know, in his file that he has on Derek Carr, has come to the conclusion this guy can win.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some of that. Hey, I think you got the right GM there in Dave Ziegler, a guy he's got, like, you know, confidence in and knows that things are going to be run in that department the way that, you know, he finds necessary to run a successful football team. So I think there's that marriage that's probably appealing, that was appealing to Josh McDaniels. And, you know, like we've talked about before, hey, we know, I mean, Derek Carr, yeah, he's not Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow for that matter. But he's that next group of guys down. I mean, he's hovering around top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think there'd be some people that would go, oh, yeah, he's number 8 or 9 for me. I mean, he's played too good of football. He's definitely one of the positives of the Raiders organization. And I think McDaniels looks at that and goes, wait, I got that. Now let me build everything else. This guy can handle all the mental aspects that I need for this offense. And I think to your point, the demeanor is Derek Carr goes all in to please his coaches. He's going to do whatever he's got to do for the betterment of the team, the coaching staff, whatever it may be. I do think this, you know, could work, certainly there in Las Vegas.
Well, and I agree with everything you said. And it could be kind of like the flip side of what we've seen with Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford, where you have established quarterback that goes to a new team and has great success right away. It could be you have established quarterback who stays put, but new coaching staff comes in and changes everything and gets more out of him than anybody ever has. That's possible.
Yeah.
Tough division, especially if Aaron Rodgers shows up in Denver, but Derek Carr may be in a position to hold his own. Brian Daboll and Daniel Jones with the Giants, first word that comes to mind.
Potential. I think that's what I look at. I look at Brian Daboll. I mean, you know, I love the hire. We talked about it a little to start the week. I mean, I'm so excited for what the Giants are doing. I'm as excited as I've been since Tom Coughlin. You know, Brian Daboll, love his offense, love that he's the head coach. They got Wink Martindale as a D coordinator. I mean, come on, Big Blue. But I think just as far as Jones and Daboll together, yeah, I mean, first off, I think Daboll has potential to be an awesome head coach. You know, I think he's an awesome play caller. And I think he could get the potential out of Daniel Jones. You know, again, this is going to be the best system Daniel Jones is a part of. I do think that Brian Daboll, as smart as he is, the new GM, everybody, they're going to get an improvement to the offensive line. So we can finally see what Daniel Jones is all about, like we've discussed before. You know, not that we sit here and think again that he's the, you know, next or the best quarterback in football, but it's hard to really know what Daniel Jones is. Evaluating him on the Giants the last 2 years. It's really hard. You break down film of him and you just go, I don't care who you put here at quarterback. There's so many issues with that offensive line. It was the worst offensive line in football. It's not even close. It's so bad. So that's where I look at it. Daboll, his potential, and hopefully he can get all the potential we want, you know, as Giants fans out of Daniel Jones.
Josh Allen Jr. is what comes to mind for me, because that's
okay.
What they're trying to do. They wanted it last year.
Right.
They wanted Daniel Jones to make that same third-year jump that we saw from Josh Allen. Now you got the guy who engineered it who's in a position to take what Daniel Jones can do. It gets back to what we were talking about earlier. What the guy does well, bring it out of him. What he doesn't do well, like trip over the 15-yard line, have him not do that. So I think there is potential there, and I think the goal is to make him not necessarily Josh Allen, but something in that vicinity. Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence.
I guess, like, I want to say, like, been there, done that. As far as when I just think of that, I just, Peterson, been a quarterback, was as a quarterback himself and a backup. He saw,
you know, other young quarterbacks get groomed. He was there to see Brett Favre go through some of the lumps, you know, in Green Bay and other places. And then, of course, you know, you say what you want. He did do a good job with Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. Again, like we've mentioned a million times, Carson Wentz was on pace to be the MVP in football in his second year as the quarterback of the best team in football and was on fire. So he does know what it takes at the position, you know, to not only as a coach, but having the fact that he's been there as a player to steer a young quarterback like Trevor Lawrence in the right direction and make him a better player. And hopefully that happens down there in Jacksonville.
I'm going to say curiosity.
Yeah.
Because of all the marriages, this is one I look at and I say, you know, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Because it felt like Byron Leftwich was their first choice to work with Trevor Lawrence. But Leftwich didn't want Trent Baalke there, so it all blew up. And Shad Khan, the owner of the team, decided to pivot to Doug Peterson. I'm just very curious how this is going to work. Is it going to work? You know, there are unresolved questions about what happened in Philadelphia. Can he really get the most out of Trevor Lawrence? We'll see. Last one. Kevin O'Connell, soon to be named head coach of the Vikings, we think. It's not done until it's done. And Kirk Cousins.
Well, it's like, what is the word I want to use here? In part of the family, I guess, is what I want to say here. You know, and what I mean by that is we know Kirk Cousins has history with McVay and that coaching staff there. So this is going to be like, you know, O'Connell's going to a place where he's being told good things about Kirk Cousins. You know, McVay loved Kirk Cousins. He was, you know, back to like our Derek Carr McDaniels thing. He was a robot. So you could be a robot that McVay could wire and, you know, he'll do exactly that. Like, Sean said to go here and read this guy. Okay, I will. I'm a robot. I mean, that's Kirk Cousins to a degree. You know, his issue is like what you've talked about before. It's when there's nothing there and the ability to make plays off schedule are not his top notch. But he's part of the family. Kevin O'Connell coming from a coaching tree that likes Kirk Cousins. And I think within Kirk Cousins, you know, it's good to have somebody in that family because, yeah, he's going to know. He's going to know it a little bit. He's going to know what he's dealing with. He's going to know the offense. He's going to know some of the rules. He's going to know some of the little nuances about how, you know, Kevin O'Connell's offense is a little different, you know, or McVay's offense is a little different as compared to the what he's been in the last few years. So I'll go with that. I couldn't think of a real creative one there.
He loves him. He loves him not. I mean, you know, I still don't know. Because part of working with Kirk Cousins for a year in Washington, they were together. O'Connell was a quarterback's coach, and Cousins obviously the quarterback. And I don't know. I don't know what O'Connell really thinks of him. I know Sean McVay acts like he really likes him. And there was apparently some chatter last year that Cousins was a guy that the Rams would try to get instead of Stafford. Interesting to know how that alternate reality would have played out if Cousins had been the quarterback. But there are limitations to Cousins' game. When everything goes well, he's spectacular. When things don't go well, he doesn't make chicken salad. That's the problem. So they're going to have to come up with a way with Kirk Cousins where he makes chicken salad out of chicken crap. And that's where his biggest failure has been. Because any great quarterback at some point is going to have to make a play when the play isn't there. And I rarely see Cousins do that.
No, that's right. I mean, I think that's what we're talking about when you talk about the elite quarterbacks in football right now. And again, I got to go through it in my own mind. But I think there's about 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 right now in this league where you go through it and you go, wait, these guys when nothing's there. Still, like, man, the defense wins 10 plays a game, but somehow the quarterback found a way to win 6 or 7 of those plays. That is what a great quarterback does. And we saw that just in the Super Bowl. I mean, there's a few plays. Again, we talked about it yesterday, the great no-look throw down the middle. I mean, that's covered. Von Bell's in the area. He's going to, you know, Cooper Kupp's not going to be able to pass the ball. But the fact that Stafford stared over here, it took Von Bell that way, and that was just the 2 or 3 inches they needed to get the ball behind to make that play happen. So that's the value of the great quarterback, to your point, Mike.
All right, let's take a break. Back to the Super Bowl. Our final after further review of the season, focusing on the fact that the refs swallowed their whistles until they didn't. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.